A lot of what made this region what it is now happened in the middle of the 19th century when white settlers arrived in droves and the government drove the Native Americans off the land, often by killing many of them. It was official policy and it had a lasting effect, but not everyone agreed with it. One Rogue Valley settler in particular spoke out against the treatment of the Native populations, and John Beeson spoke out firmly and often. Beeson was also an abolitionist, opposed to slavery. He settled his family in the Talland area northwest of Ashland, then left to press the case for better treatment for Native Americans. Our first guest is working on a book about John Beeson. Jan Wright is a historian living in the Rogue Valley for quite some time now, the former head of the Talland Historical Society and our guest in the exchange. Jan, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me today.
So give us some background on John Beeson and his family. Where did he live and what did he do before making the trek to Oregon?
Well, he lived in Illinois before he came to Oregon, but before that, he was from England, and he was an immigrant, and I often think it took an immigrant to tell people how the Constitution and the laws of the land should be enforced.
Really? So he, even though he was not an American initially, he certainly embraced the country and embraced a higher ideal than perhaps people of his time did.
Exactly.
So why did he move to Oregon?
He got restless, just like a lot of people in that time period. He heard lots of stories about Oregon, and he was never quite content with his life. He traveled a lot, and I think he just wanted to do it. He convinced his family that it was a good idea. And they took off in 1853 and came to Oregon.
How outspoken had he been as an abolitionist? He was anti-slavery as well as anti-mistreatment of Native Americans. So, I mean, had he made a name for himself as an abolitionist in the East?
Yes, he had. He belonged to the Liberty Party, which was an unusual party that opposed even the Constitution because it didn't speak about abolishing slavery. It was called the Liberty Party. It was formed in the 1840s before the Republican Party was formed. He was also involved in a newspaper that was written in the 1840s in Illinois that was an abolitionist paper.
Had he become something of a persona non grata in Illinois? Had he spoken up enough to make himself unpopular with people?
Well, I think in the particular place he was at, there were a lot of abolitionists. He was one of many, but he had a particular zealousness that was noted in the histories and stuff of Illinois.
All right. The particular time that they moved here was a very pivotal period in history. I mean, this is when. I'm trying to think about this is after the Missouri Compromise of 1820, but the Kansas-Nebraska Act was pretty soon before or right around the time that they moved to Oregon, wasn't it?
Right. I think that he cut his teeth on abolitionists. He learned from them. His form of activism was taught to him by the abolitionists. So he used shame and sympathy and all of those things and guilt, white guilt for their treatment of different races. And he really knew how to bring out people's sympathy. So he used that when he started his Indian causes.
So 1853, he left Illinois and headed for Oregon. How big was the family at that point, and did they know for sure that the Rogue Valley was going to be the part of Oregon they'd set up shop?
I think they formulated that plan as they went, and other people that were traveling with them had specifically relatives that were here in the Rogue Valley, so they went with them. And John Beeson said when he arrived that it was the most beautiful place he'd ever seen, and it was better than a painting. So he was happy with where they stopped.
Now, whites had not been in the Rogue Valley for long, but tensions with Native Americans were certainly heating up. Can you give us a sense of the general situation into which the Beesons moved?
Well, the day they arrived, there were little skirmishes with the Indians, and they actually camped at Fort Wagner, had just been built in Talland, And they had to fort up with the other settlers the very first day they were here.
Jan Wright is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. She's working on a book about John Beeson, who moved to the Rogue Valley in the 1850s and spoke out almost immediately about the treatment of Native Americans here. He was also an abolitionist and had made his case known back in Illinois. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about this chunk of the region's history and America's history while we're at it. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So where did the Beesons live? Again, how big the family, and what was the plan for the future?
John Beeson had two children, Francis, who died at infancy, and Wellborn Beeson. Wellborn was his only child, and his wife, Anne. They came out here in 1853, as I said, and John immediately started to see wars and problems with the Indians, and immediately began to discover that the whites were actually causing the problems. And when he spoke out, he could not keep quiet. He was not that kind of a guy. He was morally motivated to speak out. He said that other people agreed with him, but they weren't willing to stand up and say so. So I'm glad that Indivisible is on today, because I think about that a lot. We may go to rallies. I go to rallies. We may go and write to our congressmen. But John Beeson really made a career out of it. He really sacrificed, and it became his obsession, and he became completely identified with the Native American causes.
Had he intended to come out here and just keep his head down and be a farmer, and did it become impossible, or was it something he thought he would probably end up getting back to anyway?
No, he did not intend to do this, and he was actually kicked out of the valley. He didn't go willingly. There was an indignation meeting called against him, and the local Democratic candidates for office and the newspaper editor and the clergy were all opposed to him speaking out against and writing to other newspapers. And they actually confiscated a letter that he had written to the San Francisco Herald from the post office, which was illegal. Mm-hmm. And read it during this indignation meeting and got people stirred up about him and threatened his life. So he had to leave. And I think as he left Oregon and the Rogue Valley, he had to think on his feet and formulate a plan of what he would do. He sailed to New York, wrote the book A Plea for the Indians, which just began his career. It wasn't the end of his career. It was a seminal book about the treatment of the Indians in Oregon.
So did, he came pretty close to getting ridden out of town on a rail, it sounds like.
Yes, he did. So that left his son, Wellborn, the only child. Mm-hmm. Most pioneer families had several children, to the entire burden of the 360-acre donation land claim.
Wow, that's a lot of land to work. And how old was Wellborn when John Beeson left the valley?
He was 19.
Okay, so a strapping young fellow, we can assume, perhaps.
Yes.
If he lived to be 19, that's the truth of the times. So there is still a Beeson Lane in Talon.
Yes.
Is that the heart of what was their property?
Yes, their property was right on Wagner Creek Road. The house that they lived in is sometimes called Meadowbrook Farm, the Nut Farm. It's very visible, very prominent house on Beeson Lane.
Wellborn Beeson, as I understand, kept a diary. I know some members of the Talent Historical Society put listings of it up on Facebook on a fairly regular basis.
Yes.
So how detailed was Wellborn's diary? I'm curious to know if he listed events only or if at any point he registered his feelings about the fact that Pa had left him in charge of this gigantic spread pretty much by himself and his mother.
I'm so glad you asked me that. Wellborn Beeson is kind of like the love of my life. The Talent Historical Society repatriated the diaries. We got them microfilmed from the University of Oregon and and transcribed all 40-some-odd years of the diary. And he pretty much wrote every day, and it is the most amazing diary that I've ever transcribed, and I've transcribed many diaries. It does reveal the inner man. It talks about his emotions and his politics and his social life, and it's just really an incredible story. And that's part of what I'm using to write this book. There's so many personal things about the Beeson family that are not very well known.
Jan Wright's book will be about John Beeson, Wellborn Beeson's father. As you've been hearing, John Beeson was an abolitionist and also an opponent to the treatment of Native Americans in the country, which was not a popular position to hold in the 1850s and got him invited to leave the Rogue Valley. You can join the conversation on the Exchange at 800-838-3760 over the phone. Our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. So you mentioned that John intend for the farm to help subsidize what he was doing elsewhere in the country?
Oh, yes. And that caused some, the dynamics of the family changed, of course, when John Beeson left. And the family were expected to help fund John Beeson's wandering around on the East Coast. And there was some tension about that. They had good years and bad years on the farm, and Wellborn was pretty much doing it by himself. He had to hire people every once in a while, but he was at a distinct disadvantage the rest of the neighbors.
Now, who was Wellborn's mom, John's wife? We don't know.
Her name was Anne Beeson. Mm-hmm. She was also from England and immigrated with John to the United States in 1830. As far as we know, we don't know a whole lot about her. We know when she died, and she had a strained relationship by the time she died with John. It was very difficult for her to reconcile that he was gone all those years. He could have come back, mm-hmm. And he did come back once. Before she died and was there when she died, but he was out plowing corn in the field while she was on her deathbed.
Hmm. Okay, not the most attentive husband, that is for sure. Did their Britishness have anything to do with part of the opposition to them? I mean, did that engender some more hackles raised on people because
it
of the
did.
Fact they were English?
It did. People in Oregon ridiculed him for being a foreigner. Even though he was a naturalized citizen, he went through the process of becoming a citizen. They used that as a point of contention.
Scott in Ashland sends an email. He says, given that Southern Oregon was a center of pro-Southern sentiment in Oregon, did Beeson's abolitionist views play any role in the local public sentiment against him?
Oh, absolutely. They also used that strongly and ridiculed him for being part of the Underground Railroad because that was technically an illegal action. And so his opponents pointed to that, saying, you know, this man is not a good man. He's not obeying the law.
So sort of a triple strike against John Beeson then. Anti-slavery, anti-Native America, or anti-mistreatment of Native Americans, mm-hmm. and being British as well. William Lloyd Garrison, who was also a famous abolitionist, also spoke out about the mistreatment of Native Americans. I mean, was Beeson considered to be in the same league? Was his name mentioned in the same sentence as William Lloyd Garrison, for example?
Well, William Lloyd Garrison was also a part of the Liberty Party that I spoke of earlier in Illinois. Beeson was associated with Wendell Phillips, Peter Cooper, Abraham Hewitt, and some other very wealthy philanthropists on the East Coast. He was well known. He was a familiar face in Washington, D.C. to senators. Thaddeus Stevens knew him. He was really well known in his time.
So did he meet with Abraham Lincoln as well?
Absolutely. Abraham Lincoln made John Beeson a promise that John kept in his pocket. It said that after the war was over, after the Civil War was over, that Lincoln promised to focus his attentions on the Indian problems. Of course, that never happened because Lincoln was killed, but John Beeson utilized that statement over and over again when he applied to the subsequent Indian Bureau managers mm-hmm. and presidents.
Well, things obviously did not go well for Native Americans after the Civil War. Was there anything that John Beeson could really point to as something to be proud of in his opposition to their mistreatment?
Well, I think one of the coolest things he did was delay the reparations that Oregonians were applying for. The trick was that John Beeson's contention was that Oregonians who were exterminating Indians and causing the wars were also turning around and applying to the government for reparations for
to get paid
a
back
mule.
For damages and losses.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so they were creating a problem to make money. And John Beeson told that to Congress, and Congress did not take that lightly. And they kept delaying over and over again the pensions and the reparations because John Beeson convinced them that they didn't deserve it.
Okay, two final questions for this last minute. When did John Beeson die, and what's it going to take to get your book published?
John Beeson died in 1889. He did die here in Talent. He came back to Talent in 1880. He was deaf. He couldn't hear anymore, and he brought a second wife with him. He had a very interesting life here in Oregon. And it's going to take, I am starting a Kickstarter program to fund some time for me to write this book. I've tried for many years to write while I've been working, and it just hasn't really worked. I need to devote a lot of time to it, and I'm ready to do it. I have lots of research all over my house, and I want to get people to look into the Kickstarter and go to kickstarter.com and type in my name mm-hmm. and you'll find the link on the website.
It is linked as well. Yeah, it is linked as well from the Jefferson Exchange website. Mm-hmm. So that's Jan Wright, who's working on a book about John Beeson, abolitionist and also a complainer about the mistreatment of Native Americans, a very odd thing to do in the mid-1850s. Jan, thanks so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
And
best of luck with the book.